This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The recent tiger attack at the San Francisco Zoo led a lot of people to rethink the role that zoos really play. Are they places where rare species like tigers and elephants are being rescued or enslaved or both? How big a role does conservation play compared to commercialism? Few of us know how zoos actually work or where the animals really come from. Thomas French, a reporter for the St. Petersburg Times, spent 4 years researching those issues for a series titled Zoo Story that was based on a set of decisions and controversies around the expansion and modernization of the Lowry Park Zoo in Tampa. Later in the hour, economists devise incentives for all kinds of things. So how about the economic incentive diet? But first, the zoo. Has a visit to the zoo changed the way that you think about animals? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, our email address, talk@npr.org, and you can tell us your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Thomas French of the St. Petersburg Times joins us from a studio at the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And you described the Lowry Park Zoo as not so very long ago, one of the worst of the old-style zoos.
Well, back in the 60s and 70s and most of the 80s, it was known as one of the absolute worst zoos in the country by the Humane Society and many others. You talk to Tampa residents who grew up going there, and they just talk about it in almost nightmarish terms, reeking cages, very unhappy animals who were actually the threat was really to the animals from the people who were so close to them would throw things into their cages and really, really just an awful place.
And when did the transition take place? And then as they started thinking more and more about expansion, they got involved into a lot of controversies.
Yes. They tore down the city of Tampa, working with the nonprofit Zoological Society, tore down the old zoo in the late 80s and opened a new zoo and really tried to remake it in much more progressive, enlightened terms with more natural, open habitats. And the zoo gradually grew. And then a few years ago, 4 years ago to be exact, the zoo's CEO, Lex Salisbury, decided to bring in some elephants, to export or import some elephants, wild elephants from Swaziland in southern Africa, along with the San Diego Zoo, which was doing the same thing, the San Diego Wild Animal Park. And that was a very controversial decision. But the zoo felt it was important for a variety of reasons, having to do with the reproductive health of captive elephants throughout the U.S., but also with for the zoo itself. Every exit poll they had from visitors said that the number one animal they wanted to see more of was elephants. So it was just a very controversial decision.
And we'll get into that in some detail in this broadcast. But again, that goes again to the heart of your article, that this is zoos are a business as well as, whatever they may be in terms of rescuing animal species and rare animal species and all of those things. But they're also a business. There's one story you tell about a female tiger who's sort of the an older and the queen of the zoo, thinks the whole thing. And a very frustrated young male they keep trying to pair her with, partly because, well, tigers are rare too. Cubs would be good, but cubs would also, you suggest, be a nice draw.
Yes. You know, it's everything at the zoo is complicated, which is why it was such an interesting place to study and to report. To have baby tigers, the decision was made to pair Inshallah, this female tiger, and Eric, the male tiger, who is actually from the National Zoo there in D.C. The decision wasn't made because they wanted to make more money. In fact, the decision of which animals can be put together for breeding is not usually up to the zoo. It's usually up to the species survival program. In this case, it was for Sumatran tigers. So it wasn't made specifically for that reason. It was made because it's an endangered species and they need more cubs. But as an added benefit, yes, tiger cubs are very popular with the public, and they knew that, as always, that if you have baby animals, especially something as cute as a baby tiger, it's going to bring in more people. And so there's always an overlap.
Yeah. And there's another story about the zoo there, a chimpanzee named Herman, who's sort of the dominant chimpanzee in the troop there in the enclosure, but a very frustrated man, too.
Yeah. A lot of the story is about we have these relationships with these animals where the zoo is trying to provide them a habitat, and humans are trying to help them. But sometimes our efforts to help them only complicate things worse. Herman was brought over from Africa as an infant chimp. He was a family pet by a family that loved him and took good care of him. But being raised by humans left him with this identity crisis where he did not understand fully that he was a chimp. He was only attracted to human females, which is it's kind of funny in some ways if you're watching the exhibit and seeing him flirt with human females, these blonde moms that would walk up with their strollers, and Herman would be really flirting with them. And that's kind of funny, but in reality, it was really sad because it cut him off in a very profound way from his own species. So this family had loved him, but their love had, in ways they couldn't have foreseen, changed him. And his story was just he's a really interesting personality, a really interesting leader of the chimps. And late in the time that I reported, when there was a coup and another chimp toppled him, it was just really, really, it was almost like watching something out of I, Claudius.
Which then brings us back to the story of the elephants. And there is great controversy. A lot of people say elephants are kind of incredibly sensitive creatures. They need hundreds of miles in which to roam. It's the height of cruelty to bring them to anything, even including a 3-acre enclosure, very large for a zoo.
That's true. Elephants are extremely controversial. People feel very strongly about them. But if you go to Africa, I did some reporting in Africa this past spring in Swaziland, where these elephants were from. They were slated to be killed. They're in the game parks there, where the elephants are essentially overrunning the game parks. They destroy trees. They like to eat the bark off of trees. And that then takes away habitat and food from other species, sometimes other species more endangered than the elephants. And so the decision been made in these game parks that if we can't find a new home for these elephants, we'll have to destroy some of them. So 7 were sent to San Diego and 4 to Tampa, and yet there were people who felt that it was better if they had actually been allowed to die free than to live in captivity inside a zoo. And that's a pretty that's one end of the argument. And there's other people who think zoos are, you know, the greatest places on earth, and that's there's nothing complicated about it at all. But if you spend time at the zoo with the elephants and their keepers, who work really hard to take good care of them, you see that every decision they make is very complicated. And obviously just the decision to bring them here, very complicated decision.
And it involved a lot of things, including a lot of action in federal court. But finally, the decision was made. And the people who ran the game park in Swaziland came over to look at the zoos ahead of time to make sure that their animals would not be too badly treated.
Yes. Mick Riley, who's a member of this family, the Riley family, who operates and has fought for wildlife preservation in Swaziland for decades, came over to see the San Diego Wild Animal Park and Lowry Park Zoo, and he was really, really impressed with the care that they were going to get and with the expertise of the staffs. And Mick and his family, if you spend any time with them in Swaziland, you see instantly how much they love these animals. They've known these elephants since they were born. They know their names. They know their personalities. The elephants know them. And so it was really, really a difficult decision for them as well, but one that they worked through very carefully.
We're asking listeners to call us and tell us how a visit to their zoo changed their view of animals, or maybe themselves. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Our guest is Thomas French of the St. Petersburg Times, who wrote an in-depth series on zoos and the stories behind many of the animals in them for the St. Petersburg Times. And let's see if we get a caller on the line, and this is Hugh. Hugh with us from Oakland, California.
Yes, in the Oakland Zoo, right across the bay, of course, from the San Francisco Zoo, has made a determined effort over the years to transform itself from an old-style zoo to a new-style zoo. So to take an example of the elephants, now they have a very large area to roam around in, as do some of the bison and some of the other animals, whereas before, years ago, they were in an enclosed area where the parrots are now. They also do a lot of effort to educate the public about the challenges these animals are facing in the wild, and cooperate with a lot of international efforts to save endangered species.
And do you go to see them, Hugh?
Sorry?
Do you go visit the zoo?
Oh, of course. We go with our children, and it's an educational experience. And these transformations can happen, but they do take an effort. And the Oakland Zoo has been able to do this on a smaller budget than the San Francisco Zoo.
Well, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. One of the things that you talk about in your articles, Thomas French, is the idea of, you're bringing in these elephants that would have been killed otherwise, and yet you're also building a whole new wing on their backs in a way.
Mm-hmm. It's, like I said, everything at the zoo is complicated, that economic decisions override or overlap with conservation decisions. You know, one of the things that the people who run the zoo, Lex Salisbury, the CEO, would say is that the zoo is a nonprofit organization, but it has to survive economically if it's going to do any work to fight for the conservation of endangered species, not just at the zoo, but around the world. Zoo critics would argue that those efforts, those conservation efforts, are essentially a token designed to whitewash the larger exploitation that they believe zoos perpetrate every day. It's really a complicated issue. But working on the design of the zoos and trying to make them more open and more spacious is obviously key. Another thing that's just really interesting is when I went to Africa, what you see there is that space is running out in Africa. I think a lot of Americans, I know I did, I thought of Africa as a place of these vast, unbounded spaces. But it's not. And in Africa, especially southern Africa, elephants are coming into conflict with humans and human boundaries and human considerations and constraints increasingly.
We're talking with Thomas French about zoos. He wrote a series of articles for the St. Petersburg Times about it. Lions, tigers, bears aren't the half of it. We're taking an inside look at our nation's zoos. So what have you experienced when you've been there? What have you learned? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. St. Petersburg Times reporter Thomas French spent 4 years inside Tampa's Lowry Park Zoo, where he followed the keepers and the animals, interviewed everybody from the volunteers to the zoo's CEO. If you want to see what he found there, you can find a photo gallery documenting life inside the Lowry Park Zoo at our website, npr.org. And we want to hear from you, especially if you're a zoo goer. Why do you go? What do you get out of it? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can tell us your story on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. We had this email from Dean in St. Louis. Zoos have had a positive and a negative impact on my perception of animals. A, respect and awe from the animals that I've seen and learned about up close, and B, much greater disrespect for Homo sapiens and the way we treat animals and cage them up. A double-edged sword. No? And I guess, Thomas French, that's a lot about what you're writing about.
Absolutely. You spend any time at the zoo and you learn very quickly that the most unruly, misbehaving species there is easily the humans. It's very disheartening sometimes to sit beside an exhibit and listen to what people say and some of the things they do. The keepers are very accustomed to some of the visitors being very disrespectful and sometimes trying to throw things at the animals, trying to get their attention in ways that are upsetting to the animals. And the keepers are very careful too. They really like the visitors. They're happy that so many of the visitors get a lot out of it. But I have to say, it was really hard sometimes to. I was kind of ashamed of my own species sometimes because our behavior is appalling a lot of times.
Interestingly, you also write about how the zookeepers, when they go outside the zoo, still in their uniforms, and attract not necessarily welcome attention.
Sometimes that's true. Many keepers, when they go out, people are very excited to learn that they work at a zoo, but there are sometimes when they go to the grocery and they'll still be wearing their insignia from the zoo, and people will grimace or will make comments. People have such complex feelings about a zoo and about the nature of captivity and what that means or doesn't mean for the animals. And that ambivalence really reflects itself in how people respond to the keepers.
Yeah. Freedom is a strange concept in a lot of ways. It gets contorted in interesting ways in your story.
Yeah, in many ways, freedom is, to me, if people ask me to say in one word what the story is about, it's about freedom. It's about the nature of freedom in an overcrowded world. None of us are completely free. I heard Jan Martel, the author of Life of Pi, who I interviewed recently for the story, talking about how freedom is really defined by its constraints, and how we think about freedom in very idealistic ways. But freedom is a very complicated question, and in the wild, how freedom is defined there and how freedom is defined in the zoo, it's a very difficult question, and people have very strong feelings that they bring to that question.
Let's get some more callers involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's go now to, this is Denise. Denise with us from San Francisco.
Yes, hi there. First of all, I go to zoos mostly to document the animals who are more often than not exhibiting some form of abnormal behavior or just sitting lethargically because there's not there very much to do. But I really wanted to just briefly address the Swaziland elephants, because I was involved in the Swaziland elephant controversy. And actually, there were two preserves that in Africa who are willing to take those elephants and keep them in a natural setting. But Ted Riley, who is Mick's father, chose to sell the elephants to the two U.S. zoos for a profit. And as you know, Swaziland is the last monarchy in Africa. It's a totalitarian rule, and the king has been accused of corruption many times, and this deal for the Swaziland elephants was corruption. They should never have been taken from the wild and put into these small, and you're right, you're right when you say 3 acres is very small for an elephant. And it's a shame. We're seeing people go to zoos, and like you said, they're making fun. They really don't even know what they're looking at, because these elephants are exhibiting all sorts of abnormal behaviors.
Thomas French, that controversy certainly hasn't seemed to have gone away.
No, I don't think it ever will. It's such a complicated question. I think this issue of profit is a tough one, though, because the zoos paid $12,000 per elephant. And the money, the Riley's saying, if you go there and look at the parks, you see it. The money has been poured back into buying more land, doing other things at the parks to help these species. I don't think it would have been much of a profit for the Riley family.
That's not true, sir. They had a multi-year deal with the Rileys. And, you know, the Rileys, I mean, he's not only the head of conservation, he's the head of the parks. He was the one man who rubber-stamped the whole deal.
Well, that's true. The family does have essentially control those parks along with that king. That's correct.
Yeah. So anyway, but my bigger point is...
I'm sorry, ma'am. Can I ask you a question? Have you been to Tampa and seen how the elephants are doing there?
Actually, my colleague has gone and documented. And, you know, you can get elephants from the wild and put them in an enclosure. And these elephants are probably not going to exhibit stereotypic behavior because they probably aren't chained. And we know that stereotypic behavior in elephants result from chaining. When I say stereotypic, I mean swaying. Mm-hmm. Head bobbing, those
right.
Sort of abnormal behaviors. So, I mean, I have to tell you, though, that most animals in zoos, from species to species, you're going to see them exhibiting various abnormal behaviors, from head bobbing, swaying, pacing, to constant licking. It can result in a bunch of different manners. And also, when you
it's true, you will see that. You will see that sometimes in a lot of zoos.
When you
That's
talk
correct.
About conservation. Can I just say one thing about conservation?
And quickly, because we want to give some other people
quickly,
a chance.
I just got an email from South Africa saying for $350 they can buy an acre of land. So, I mean, it's very cheap to do conservation in Africa. $10,000 gets an anti-poaching team of 7 men for a whole year. So we're spending millions of dollars housing these animals.
Denise?
Meanwhile, spending very little on true conservation.
Thanks very much
Thank
for your
you.
Call. Bye-bye. And these are indeed a lot of the issues, very passionate issues that the
Absolutely.
They felt on all sides from the people in Swaziland, indeed, and Tampa and San Diego as well.
Absolutely. People feel so strongly, and the issues are so complicated that and the emotions are so high that you just like Denise was just saying, I mean, people just... They really feel strongly about it. She obviously cares deeply about the issue and has spent a lot of time trying to document what's happening with animals, and I have to respect that.
Let's get, this is Sue. Sue's with us from Niantic in Connecticut.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to talk about a species that is not as popular as tiger cubs or elephants. I'm talking about snakes. I had the experience when I was a youngster, we went for a day trip to the zoo in Basel, Switzerland, and the warden there handed us a python, and the python just kind of moved from one hand to the other of the students, and I felt this terrific sense of surprise. It was not slithery. It was mm-hmm. not cold. It was a very warm feeling that I got from this touching this snake. And it seems as a consequence, I have never been afraid of snakes. I mean, I respect them. But the other thing is that I'd like to kind of say how important it is for children to be exposed to these types of animals that are not popular.
Mm-hmm.
And my children have learned from me. I mean, we have garter snakes in our yard, and they came home with them and showed them to me, and we found a nice warm spot for them back in the yard. And it's just, I think it's an important thing for kids to learn.
And moving on from that, Thomas French, people say, well, that's all well and good, and that's an important educational goal, and people shouldn't automatically kill the snakes in their backyard. And if she learned a lesson and other people did too, that's great. But if you're going to continue to fund the less popular exhibits, you need to fund the more popular exhibits too.
That's exactly right. You know, one of the things that's interesting about the I'm glad you brought up the cold-blooded creatures, because we spend a lot of time in the story talking about that part of the zoo. It is fun to talk about elephants, and interesting and powerful to talk about elephants and tigers and chimps. The charismatic mammals is what they're called in the zoo world. But we spent a lot of time, the photographer and I, writing and chronicling frogs and snakes as well. One of the things that's interesting is that important is that amphibian species all over the world are dying off at an incredibly rapid rate. It's really alarming. And a lot of species, especially of frogs, researchers around the world are collecting the last specimens of these frog species before they die off in the wild, and then essentially doing making zoos into kind of an ark where they try to save some genetic sampling of the species in the hope that someday, if the wild ever returns, these species can be returned. And Lowry Park is one of the zoos involved in that effort. It was really an interesting part of the story, and watching these zookeepers and the researchers fighting for these frogs.
Just to announce a program change, in about 10 minutes we're going to change what we had planned to do, since we now have the opportunity to speak with John Edwards, the Democratic presidential candidate. So if you have questions for John Edwards about his campaign and where it's going, you can send email questions now. The address is talk@npr.org. And in the meantime, we're going to continue talking with our guest Thomas French of the St. Petersburg Times about his series about zoos. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Rachel. Rachel with us from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I really agree with Thomas. I'm a former zookeeper, and there are so many checks and balances, things you have to think about as a zookeeper or the administration. And we do try to stimulate them with outside activity and with enrichment to try to reduce those abnormal behaviors so that they can be ambassadors for the rest of the animals of their species.
But that ambivalence of, on some level, this is not where these animals should be, or this may not even be good for them.
But the truth is, any zookeeper in the world started out being a lover of animals, and we know where they should be. And because of that, and that love and compassion for these animals, we want to be able to see that continue so that my children, my grandchildren can see that. And the only way to do that is by making it real to everyone around the world, people that can't travel to Africa to see these animals in the wild.
Yet if you go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Thomas.
I was just going to say, Rachel, that I heard what you just expressed from a lot of keepers. You know, you all know and love the animals, and so seeing them in captivity is in some ways hardest for the keepers, because you guys love the animals more than anybody, and you know them. I heard from a lot of keepers who said that they wish they could set all their animals free into the wild. But realistically speaking, for many of those species, there's no more wild left. And the zoo, even though it's an imperfect place, is a lot of the keepers would say to me, is the best place we've got for them.
I completely agree. You know, certainly animals do go through distress, and we try to minimize that. But the truth is that if we just ignore the problems, we close all the zoos, who's going to be there to save them? Who's going to know that they exist, what their problems are, and who's going to be the next generation to say, you know, when I was 5, I saw that animal, and all I could think is I wanted to see more of them.
Thanks very much, Rachel. Appreciate
Thank
the phone
you.
Call. We have this email from Dan. I don't work at a zoo, but as a biologist, I have worked with zoo employees in several zoos across the country. No group of people I've met is more dedicated to the welfare of animals than the keepers and curators at zoos. It's certainly true that zoos are not ideal and improvements need to be made. That said, I have been extremely impressed by the dedication of the zoo community to finding and implementing ways to improve both the care of their captive animals and their conservation efforts. And from what I read in your article, I think you would say hear, hear to that.
Yes. The keepers that I spent those years with are extremely dedicated, extremely passionate. Like Rachel said, they grew up, all of them, loving animals. And they go into work every day doing whatever they can to make their lives better and believing, as the, someone said a second ago, that they are ambassadors for their species. And they give tremendously of themselves. The keepers were phenomenal to work with.
We're talking with Thomas French of the St. Petersburg Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Aaron. Aaron's on the line with us from Saugatuck in Michigan.
Hi there. First of all, I'd like to say that I really love your show.
Oh, thank you.
But I am an avid animal lover. Because of the experience that I've had with zoos and animals, I'm choosing to go to college for biology. What I'd like to say is that, I mean, zoos, throughout my childhood, my parents took me to zoos. I read about zoos in books. They exposed me to animals all across the world. And, you know, animals are really important to me because of that. But recently I went to a zoo in Miami. And it occurred to me that because of the things I know now, zoos are unbelievably depressing. I've been to zoos like, for instance, the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago, and the zookeepers there really love their animals and make a huge effort to keep animals happy and put them in environments that will keep them interested and stimulated. That's really kind of revolutionary, that's a zoo that I really appreciate.
But
the zoos in Miami, they were cooped up in small areas and they were alone, maybe with another animal, and they just looked unbelievably depressed.
And I think I've not been to the Miami Zoo, but Thomas French, I think a lot of us can second that opinion. We've been to places where it is depressing sometimes to look at these animals.
Absolutely. You go to a zoo where the animals appear miserable and where they're pacing back and forth or exhibiting some of that behavior that the one caller was describing earlier, it breaks your heart. You go to other zoos, though, that are more enlightened and that are working to evolve, giving a lot more space to the animals, whether it's Lowry Park in Tampa. I went to the Singapore Zoo not long ago. Amazing experience to see, for instance, the orangutan habitat in the Singapore Zoo. And you feel it's a different experience than going to one of those other places. But all the zoos, no zoo is perfect, and it's a difficult environment. One of the things I haven't said yet is that in Shala, that tiger that we talked about earlier, who I followed for several years, late in the time of my reporting, she escaped herself. And ultimately, they have a weapons team that to try to prevent an animal escape and from the animal from escaping out into the city. And it was a very difficult, painful episode for the zoo staff who loved this tiger and had known this tiger since she was a cub. They tried to dart her and tranquilize her. The tranquilizers don't always kick in immediately like in the movies. And she leapt and turned on the veterinarian who had tried to dart her. And the zoo's director shot and killed her as she tried to get toward the veterinarian. It was just an extremely painful episode for the zoo and for these people who love her. And so it's not a perfect environment. She got out because of human error. A keeper had accidentally left a door unlocked or unlatched. But, you know, once in a while there are these extremely difficult, painful episodes. I was in San Francisco recently and obviously this other one in Tampa.
The zoo director shot her?
Yeah, Lex Salisbury was one of these things where it took some time to process it. Once I heard about it, that the zoo's director ended up back at the zoo. He was on his way home when the tiger escaped, and drove back, joined the weapons team, and was there covering the vet with a shotgun when he tried to tranquilize the tiger. And a lot of people were very critical of Lex Salisbury for taking that shot. But when I talked to other members of the weapons team, they said they were grateful that he'd taken that responsibility because they loved this tiger. It was a very, very difficult thing, and they were grateful that he'd done it instead of them having to do it.
Thomas French, a writer for the St. Petersburg Times, with us from the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg. To see photos from Zoo Story and read the story in its entirety, you can visit our website, npr.org/talkofthenation. Thomas French, thanks very much.
Neil, thank you.
And a reminder of a program change. Coming up, we'll be talking with Jonathan Edwards. John Edwards, the Democratic presidential candidate, the former senator from North Carolina. He'll be joining us. If you'd like to join that conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.